Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay. This microphone works pretty good. State of the art. No one's going to pull one over on the Hare Krishnas. Okay, text number 14, Canto 6, Chapter 4, the Hamsaguya prayers. Yak samut patitam deha akashan manyum ubanam atma jigya saya yachet sa gunan ati vartate yak samut patitam deha yak samut patitam deha akashan manyum ubanam akashan manyum ubanam atma jigyasaya yache atma jigyasaya yache sagunan ativartate sagunan ativartate yaksamuta yaksamut patitam deha akashan manyum ubanam atma jigyasaya yachet sagunan ativartate yaksamu patitam deha akshanam manyum ubanam atma jignasya jayate saguna nativartate Patitam deha Anamubalam Amajigyasaya yache Saganan ativartate Yaksamut patitam deha Atma jigyasaya yache manatibhartate. Ladies. Patitam deha akshana manyumubanam nanandaryam yache Sagana nativartate Yaksamupatitam deha Akashan manyumubanam Majigyasaya yache Ya anyone who Sambud patitam suddenly awakened, dehe, in the body Akashad, from the sky. Manyum, anger. Ubanam, powerful. Atma, Jigyasaya, by inquiry into spiritual realization or self-realization. Yache, subdues. Sa, that person. Gunan, the modes of material nature. Ativartate, transcends. Translation. One who inquires into self-realization, you repeat that? And thus subdues his powerful anger, which awakens suddenly in the body, as if falling from the sky, transcends the influence of the modes of material nature. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. When one becomes angry, he forgets himself and his situation. But if one is able to consider his situation by knowledge, one transcends the influence of the modes of material nature. One is always a servant of lusty desires, anger, greed, illusion, envy, and so forth. But if one obtains sufficient strength and spiritual advancement, one can control them. One who obtains such control will always be transcendentally situated, untouched by the modes of material nature. This is only possible when one fully engages in the service of the Lord. As the Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita, Mam chayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate saganan samatityaitam brahmabhuyaya kapate. One who engages in full devotional service, who does not fall down in any circumstance, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the spiritual platform. By engaging one in devotional service, the Krishna consciousness movement keeps one always transcendental to anger, greed, lust, envy, and so forth. One must perform devotional service because otherwise one will become victimized by the modes of material nature. One who inquires into self-realization and thus subdues his powerful anger, which awakens suddenly in the body as if falling from the sky, transcends the influence of the modes of material nature. So this is a pretty powerful verse. That's a theme that's repeated quite prevalently throughout all of Srila Prabhupada's books. Bhagavad Gita has practically a whole chapter on the modes of, well, it does have a whole chapter on the modes of material nature. But here, this particular verse is warning us about anger. Now, that's a pretty serious warning, and it's a pretty scary is the word for it, because I get angry every day about something. But actually, there's two kinds of anger. There's the anger of that originates in the modes of material nature, and then that process described that we lust after material enjoyment, and then we become frustrated inevitably. Inevitably, we become frustrated in our pursuit of material happiness and material enjoyment, no matter what. That we have to remember that even though we live in this opulent city, Los Angeles, and we're only a few miles from Cheviot Hills, and then a few more miles from Beverly Hills and Holmby Hills and Bel Air, and there's huge mansions in these places. People have astronomical amounts of money for doing practically nothing of any value to society, except in the name of entertainment. They call that their contribution to society. We're grossing people out and making millions of dollars on that process, But we're serving society by making people sick to their stomachs and so forth, and so they'll forget their other problems for a while. So now some of these things that they produce in Hollywood are just incredible. And it's just even more credible that people pay millions and millions and millions of dollars to go see these movies, and these actors get paid these astronomical amounts of money, and then they become the big, the celebrities that are, that you hear about on the news, that people are obsessed with these celebrities. And what do? They do nothing except, I can't even repeat what they do. It's so disgusting. And I'm not even talking about sex or stuff like that. The other stuff that they do is just absurd. It's outrageous, and yet they get paid all this money. And then the public, who Prabhupada said are innocent, actually, are innocent, but the leaders have misled them. The leaders cater to their base desires for sense gratification. And that's what was discussed a little bit before this with the Prachetas when they came out of the ocean and they looked around and they saw all these trees that had grown up in their absence. Because the king, the Rajarshi, the saintly leader of society, is responsible for everything. That king is responsible for everything that goes on in his kingdom, and it actually incurs 1/6 of the karma of the population that he, and in these days she, I don't know what happens with ladies who are in that position, whether they incur that karma, because they're kind of like in a different category than the men, but certainly the men incur 1/6 of the karma. And for example, this Obama, we see it with every president. They're in office for 2 years, and it looks like they've aged 20 years. But if you look at them when they go in, they have all their hair is the same color, not gray, it's dark. And their faces are kind of youthful and full of enthusiasm. But after a year or two, their hair is gray. They have bags under their eyes. Their faces look like they're just in the middle of the worst catastrophe, and they are, because they're incurring all this karma. So society is mad after sense gratification. That's all that we think about, is how to enjoy these senses. And Prabhupada says, during the day, mad after money, where's money, where's money, where's money? And then at night, there's a little bit of enjoyment in sex life and sleep. A few minutes of sex life, maybe some intoxication, because otherwise they can't tolerate the material world without intoxication. That's why it's so prominent in society. It's rampant. Either alcohol or drugs of various kinds, because they're so stressed out and they're so burned out from this pursuit of money to maintain the body. That's it. Just simply to maintain the body. That by the time they get home at night, they're full of anger, they're full of stress, because that's what happens. From material desires, lust is born, or from the three modes of nature, from the mode of passion, lust is born, and from lust comes anger. Anger comes when the living entities are unable to satisfy their material desires. Sooner or later, that anger will manifest as if dropping from the sky. And it's so powerful that actually the biggest sector of criminal activities is domestic violence. That more crimes are committed in the context of domestic life than any other segment of society. Not gangs, not the mafia, not illegal aliens, not the ghettos, nothing. Not white collar crime and embezzlement from these investment funds and things of that sort. The biggest area of criminal activity that occurs within the context of family life. Just like every day, if you watch the news, which Prabhupada said we shouldn't do, interestingly enough. Some of us, though, have a small dispensation to keep abreast of developments in the material world, to see what's going on for purposes of our professional responsibilities. But just today, one of the biggest stories is a man who chopped up his children, put them in suitcases, and dumped them in the ocean. Two little kids, like 10 and 2 or something like that. Now, this morning, today or yesterday, they found the wife, and she was murdered also. Because the husband did it. The father and the husband did these things. What to speak of child abuse, spousal abuse. Then the cops come to the door. They get a report that there's been a domestic disturbance, it's called. And the cops come to the door, and what happens? The husband is going crazy. He starts a fight with the police. He shoots the police. The police shoot him. There's more murders and crimes committed in the context of family life than any other part of segment of society. Because that's where we're looking for enjoyment. That's why people get married. That's why they have children. These are all extensions. I'm this body, and these are my extensions of this body. I even remember when my first son was born, my first reaction was, oh my God, that's me. What is that? That's me. And it was like, eventually you get over that, but that's, from there goes society. This is my society. This is my country. This is my planet, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So inevitably, anger is the result of our frustration in trying to satisfy this material desires. Because no amount of money, and I'm talking to myself here, no amount of money, no amount of housing or luxurious living, because Prabhupada said that, they make all this money so that they can simply sleep and have better sex, so that they can build a big house. Just like there's a baseball player, he's building like a 60,000 foot house for himself. Try to imagine 60,000 feet for a house. Man, it's bigger than the whole Watsika Avenue. And this is for one person. And what's he going to do? He's going to go in, come in at night, get high, get drunk, have sex, and then go to sleep. But Prabhupada said, what is the difference between this life and the animal life? We are eating, and the animals are eating. We're eating luxurious foodstuffs and fancy restaurants. Of course, we're eating, not us, but the other people out there, are eating the most abominable substances you could imagine. I don't mean this to be offensive to anyone, but I was at a darshan with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was talking about the Chinese. And, of course, we have many, many wonderful Chinese devotees, thanks largely to Tamal Krishna Maharaj, who we thought was being punished by being sent to China, but in actuality, he was being rewarded, because I remember the first time I saw all the devotees from China coming to India for the Gaur Purnima Festival, I was just astonished. I was just amazed at how wonderful, how sweet they were. But we all have our baggage. I mean, I'm Jewish. I have a lot of baggage that obviously I bring with that genetic disposition. So we all have our baggage. But Prabhupada said that they are the lowest because they will eat anything. Therefore, they are the lowest. It also says some other things, but they're a little controversial in terms of starting a debate about whether it really he really meant it or not. He said there'd be a war with China. I heard it with my own ears. Because they're the lowest, and they will eat anything. Scorpions, spiders, bugs, insects. If you go to Chinatown, I'm sure Savasma has been there when you get things for the temple. I don't know if you shop in Chinatown. They have all the herbs and everything down there. God, it's terrible. I mean, the things, I mean, rhinoceros horns and shark fins and then other things that I can't really mention come from certain parts of the body of animals that we would ordinarily be pretty disgusted. But the Karmis go there because they think that by eating these things, they'll have better sex life. That's what they're doing there. They're doing there to enhance their sex life by eating these things. So it doesn't matter whether you're animal or human. We're both eating. We are eating prasadam, which is wonderful mode of goodness food, and the Karmis are eating other terrible things, all kinds of meat and other things, and the animals are eating whatever their allotment is, whatever they're meant to eat, and they're not starving. They're not starving. So we have to ask ourselves, if the animals aren't starving, if the animals have plenty of food, why are we working so hard for food? And in a fancy restaurant, they make it up so it looks very, doesn't look like what it really is, and they eat this, and this is, probably describes the process. First is eating, you fill the belly, and then the belly pushes on the genitals, and that increases sex desire. So we are eating and the animal's eating. We're defending. In I guess the Stone Age, they defended by going up on the top of a mountain or a hill and dropping big rocks or boulders on the heads of their enemies. And today we go up in these sophisticated airplanes and we drop these metal bombs on people on the ground. But the point is, we're defending and they're defending. The animals are defending in their way as well, with their claws, with their teeth, whatever nature has given them for defensive purposes, they're also defending, and we're defending. And similarly, we're sleeping, and the animals are sleeping. In India, you walk down the streets and the animals are all out on the street sleeping. Wherever they feel like sleeping, they just simply plop their bodies down and go to sleep. And in this country, of course, the animals sleep in bed with their owners. And I'm a full believer in animal rights and not necessarily equal, but they sleep in bed with their owners and eat at the table and eat the same food as their owners, and they're treated just as good as the human beings living in that particular household. And in many cases, not all cases, of course. It's mostly in this country, Western countries, the animals have been domesticated and turned into pets. But nonetheless, the animal's sleeping, and we're sleeping, and Prabhupada explains when we're sleeping, we don't even know where we are. We're gone. We're out of this body. We're someplace else. We're flying, or we're in another country, or we're in another kind of body or something of that sort. So what is the use of spending all this money for a fancy place to sleep when we don't even know where we are anyway while we're asleep? It's crazy. And similarly, sex life. The animals are having sex life. We're having sex life. The animals have sex life whenever they feel like it and wherever they feel like it. The human beings are having sex life whenever they feel like it and wherever they feel like it. Except there used to be some restrictions. That at least, as they say, get a room. But nowadays, I mean, they don't even bother to do that. And then, of course, there's a whole industry, the biggest selling drug on the market, the biggest selling pharmaceutical on the market, you guessed it. Right? Am I right? These Viagra and all these other drugs, what are they for? They're for having sex up until the minute that you die. This allows men to be sexually active up until the very instant of death. They could be 80 years old, 90 years old. Their body could be rotting. And I've seen myself when human beings get around 85, 90 years old, the body is it's terrible. It's just the teeth fall out. They can't control their bowel movements anymore. They can't walk. It's just horrible. The body is useless. But these men are all excited because now they can, even though they have this body that's just, I don't know how any woman could even think about it, but nonetheless they have these drugs that they can have sex up until the very moment of before they pass away. When the real purpose of life is to give these things up and prepare for going back to home, back to Godhead. And that is such a difficult process. That is such a traumatic process of breaking all of these material attachments. That's what this material world is all about. I mean, that's what the Krishna Consciousness Movement is all about. And that's what the material world is actually all about, because it's explained here and other places that the king, the leaders of society, their first responsibility is to institute Varnashram Dharma. That is their first and foremost responsibility, because that system, that organization of society is what leads to the people becoming God conscious. That the king must lead the people to devotional service. And it's actually said that the king has to perform 100 sacrifices, all kinds of things that they have to do to elevate the consciousness of society, not degrade it, not lead them in the wrong direction, in the other direction. So it's very difficult to break these material attachments. I mean, every stage of life, we become aware of attachments that we didn't even know existed. What to speak of getting over them or breaking them, because if we have even an iota of material desire at the time of death, then that will spoil our next destination. That one has to become completely pure. And that's the whole point. That was the whole point of the story of Ajamil that we just read, was that he got special dispensation, but he did have to come back and resume his devotional service in order to... He was saved from the Yamadutas, but he had to come back and then pick up where he left off and finish the process in order to be elevated to the spiritual world. So it's extremely difficult, but somehow or other, if we stay in this movement, then Krishna, even though it will appear we're being punished or Krishna is putting us through all kinds of trials and tribulations, that really that process is for our benefit. It's very hard to understand. I always get angry at Krishna and say things that I, in my mind, I don't verbalize them. But I think very bad things. I'm your devotee. Why are you doing this to me? I don't deserve this and other things. But ultimately, just like Queen Kunti, who prayed, and I will never pray like this. And to be put into these difficulties because it forces us to take shelter of Krishna. I heard I can't remember who it was, they said, between happiness and sorrow, I will always choose sorrow because God is always with me when I'm in that consciousness. Whereas as soon as we become happy, as soon as we become, things start going good immediately, it's impossible. I think in my mind, Krishna, just get rid of all this misery. I promise I'll be just as Krishna conscious. I'll think of you as just as intensely and just as much when things are going good and you give me all the money I need and this, this, and that, and that. But as soon as it happens, it's so hard to think of Krishna with the same intensity and to think, take shelter of Prabhupada with the same sincerity and the same intensity as when we're going through these trials and tribulations. So we have to go through these things. Prabhupada said that that the purpose of Sankirtan, well, one of the purposes, of course, is to distribute Prabhupada's books. That's obviously very important. But he says everyone should go on Sankirtan because it makes the devotees humble. That if you go out on Sankirtan and you have to approach these people, then you have to be humble to tolerate all of the abuse that you have to put up with. Now, from what I understand, of course, I was terrible at Sankirtan, so I really don't know, but that the devotees are very good, they're very expert at winning over people that they approach and leaving them with a good taste in their mouth and having a very pleasing presentation. But geez, in the old days, we had to put up with so much. I mean, if you ever went on Harinam on the Boston Common or Harvard Square in 25, 30 years ago, it was like people were throwing. A few times I was up at Boston, in Boston, I went out on Harinam and people were throwing things at us, making fun of us, calling us names, trying to pull our dhotis up. I mean, it was terrible, but we have to be like Lord Nityananda, who tolerated Jagayamada. This world is full of Jagayamadas, and we have to tolerate it. And I think that's why Krishna cursed me to become a lawyer, because I had so many of these passionate attachments that by being a lawyer, I had to. It was kind of like a yoga, that you're in the courtroom and the judge is just treating you like crap. And you have to sit there, yes, Your Honor. Yeah, thank you, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. You do. You have to follow this protocol, or otherwise the judge will find you in contempt of court or impose sanctions or threaten your license or something like that. So you have to follow it. You have to bite your tongue. You have to keep your emotions under control and not let them get in the way. And it's true. As soon as I get angry, as soon as I let my emotions take over, then my argument and what the point that I want to make to the court is lost. In this wave of emotion, of anger, of whatever other things may come up in that situation. So we have to keep these material desires under control. Prabhupada says here, anger, greed, illusion, envy, because otherwise they'll block. It's like a cloud over our ability to be Krishna conscious. We'll just be, the senses will be swept away by these powerful, extremely powerful. Arjuna said to Krishna, that the mind is so hard to control, it's more difficult than controlling the wind. Easier to control the wind than to control the mind. And what does it mean to control the mind? It means to avoid these modes of passion, ignorance, and even goodness. And one time I asked, I didn't ask, Prabhupada, somebody asked Prabhupada, what does it mean to love the spiritual master? What does it mean, love of the spiritual master? And Prabhupada said that you have made a vow. What is that vow? I'll follow these four regular principles. I'll chant 16 rounds, etc. And you've had a fire sacrifice. Now you keep your vow. That is love. And Prabhupada's not interested in this empty, flowery language and empty material emotions. He's more interested in us getting out of this material world. But there are two kinds of anger, and this will be the last point, and I'll finish up on that. But I do want, so that we understand, there's also transcendental anger. Of course, Lord Nrisimhadev is the manifestation of that transcendental anger. And that is, someone blasphemes your guru, you should become angry. That is legitimate anger. One time in Bombay, many years ago, in 1974-75, the government official stopped Sankirtan in Bombay, in Mumbai. They said we couldn't do it anymore. And I remember Prabhupada was furious. I mean, he was in a Nrisimhadev mode. I mean, absolutely, unequivocally. He was on a rampage. As a matter of fact, I remember we were in Vrindavan and we were getting ready to leave. And the buses were out in front in those days, when everybody went at the same time. We chartered a plane and then there'd be buses waiting and so forth. So all the buses were out front and they were leaving for Vrindavan, for the airport, for Delhi, leaving for Delhi. And I was like on one of the last buses. And I couldn't wait to get out of there. I think it was the first year of the Gaurpaneem Festival, worldwide Gaurpaneem Festival. And just as our bus was ready to leave, we got a message from Prabhupada. All the devotees that are still here, immediately go to Bombay. Go to Mumbai. Well, I was obviously devastated because all I was thinking about at that point was cauliflower pakoras and tomato chutney and goranga potatoes and cheesecake, chocolate eclairs. I couldn't think at that point. And there were about 30 or 40 of us that were waiting, and we got a message from Prabhupada, an order from Prabhupada. Everybody that's still here, go to Bombay. So somebody changed all the tickets. We all, whoever was left, went to Bombay. And it was actually, even though I was unhappy when it first happened, I was happy once I got there because it was the only time I ever really saw Prabhupada in that Nrisimhadev mode. I mean, every class, every single class, every darshan, he was just on a rampage against the government officials. He kept saying, in the land of Krishna, the land where Krishna has taken birth, the land where Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita, they have stopped the Sankirtan movement. He couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe it. He was stunned that in India they would shut down the Sankirtan movement, that they would stop the distribution of the Bhagavad Gita. So he had all the devotees doing, Vishnu John went down and did Harinam every day, and other devotees were visiting politicians, and everybody was running around trying to get this thing overturned and back to normal where they would give us permission again. And we were all running into brick walls. And so finally Prabhupada personally met with the leaders of the Shiv Sain party, which was a very powerful political party in Mumbai at those days. And he personally met, and then the next day everything was back to normal. But that was transcendental anger. Those are the things that it's okay to become angry about. Not, that girl's not responding to me, or I can't live in Beverly Hills, or I want a Mercedes-Benz or a Lexus or something like that, and we get angry about that. No, there's the proper things, just like the Prachetas were angry, but they were the leaders, they were in charge of society, and the trees had overgrown their proper place within the planetary arrangement, and so they became very angry. Prithu Maharaj was very angry also at the earth for withholding grains. That was his duty, so he became angry. And of course, Maharaj Parikshit was very angry at Kali when he saw Kali trying to kill Bhumi, the bull. So there are places for transcendental anger. The difference is that it's over appropriate things, whereas material anger is the death knell for devotional devotional service and spiritual life. So stop on that note. Everybody should get angry. Go out and distribute those books. Don't take no for an answer. Distribute them. So anybody have any comments? Anybody, come on. Somebody must have something to say about anger. Yes.
So could you put those two together for us and let us know where we are in terms of LAX?
I wish I knew the answer to that question. confusing situation because the judge won't really rule on anything. And we have to go back to court. We have to meet with the city on Tuesday to tell the judge what we want to do in the case, what we need to do. And that makes me angry. I get very angry about the fact that this facility for book distribution has been, and I can't understand that philosophically. So if someone could explain that to me, I'd be very indebted to them. One of the best places in the world for book distribution. Why we lost that facility? I can't rationalize or reconcile that philosophically, and I don't buy into the school of thought in some quarters of our movement that book distribution is outmoded. Now we should go to congregations and the congregation. We should become mainstream. I don't buy that. Personally, I don't buy that. I may be wrong. I mean, I've only been working on this for 15 years It's really frustrating, but some people think like that, that, you know, it gives people a bad image of being asked to give a donation, but Prabhupada told us to do it. My attitude is Prabhupada told us to do it. It's got spiritual value as well as the proselytizational element of how many people have joined because they got one of our books out on Sankirtan and read it. And how much Prabhupada emphasized. Prabhupada said, since you brought it up, in Vrindavan one year, he said, even if you all leave, he was giving a class, he said, even if you all leave, that is all right. He said, because others will come to take your place because so many books have been distributed. So that's how we populate the Krishna consciousness movement, is through book distribution. So I don't really understand. I'll know more as we go along, but it's a frustrating situation as to why all of these judges have turned against us. I don't know. I don't understand. If someone has a philosophical explanation for it, I'd be glad to hear it because I certainly don't understand it at this point of my, at this level of my so-called advancement or lack of advancement or whatever it is, I can't figure it out. So we have another hearing coming up, and we have to tell the judge what we want to do in the case. He wants more evidence and so forth about the sidewalks, and that's what we're focusing on now. And so I have another strategy too, but I'm not going to go into too much of a discussion. I mean, we have some other ideas that we're thinking about, but for right now it just seems to be a stalemate, and we can't bust out of it and get it open again at this point. And I'm mad about it. I'm angry.
So, but for every door that closes, some open. Yesterday we got a visit from four lieutenants from the local chaplain's office of the Army Reserve. They just drove up. They were looking around. Somebody brought them over to me, so I sat down with them. And they're very, very favorable. They want to establish a connection with us so they can send anybody who's interested in this religious path, they can send them here. They took books. They took prasadam. They were very, very respectful and wonderful. They just, you know, voluntarily came here. So, you know, like Prabhupada said, the books are out there, and some people will appreciate, some won't. But we just shouldn't stop. We should just keep doing what we do. And as long as we have you, there is hope that we'll get LAX back.
Well, they've said many times, and I think even anybody that's been in court has heard this, that if it was just us, there wouldn't be a problem. But there's, you know, a number of other groups out there as well, and they're not as forthright and straightforward and about their activities and so forth. And so they claim that it's the other groups and the things that they do, but what they do to one, they have to do to everybody. They can't kick one out, although they could. I could give them a way to do it. I know how it can be done. But they say, no, if we get rid of one, we have to get rid of everybody. We have to treat everybody the same. But that's not true. The Brahmins, the Vaishnavas, should not have to follow these laws. I mean, we should be allowed to distribute at a street light or at a shopping center. I mean, the duty of the king is to give the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas all facility. So they're not bound by the same laws that would restrict other segments of society. But they don't understand that, so what are we going to do? We have to elect a God-conscious president or mayor or something. We have to get some Krishna-conscious people in positions of leadership so that they'll change these laws. So, okay then. All right, I'll go to Srila Prabhupada. Oh, well, I think everybody's about ready to...